The longer I am sober, the more shocking it is to me how normal drinking is everywhere we go. And particularly as a physician who spends a lot of time trying to tell people what not to do so they don't develop problems down the road, particularly as it pertains to drinking, it is everywhere. And so we wouldn't have a melanoma awareness day on the beach. We wouldn't have lung cancer screening at a hookah lounge. But you want to have a breast cancer fundraiser, there's absolutely going to be wine there because that's just part of our culture.
Do you want to disrupt the myths and redefine the narrative of what it means to thrive in midlife? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to Midlife Revival, the podcast that's all about celebrating the power and resilience of you in midlife. I'm your host, Dr. Taniqua Miller, board-certified OBGYN with expertise in menopausal care and life coach for your midlife journey. My mission is simple, to walk with you through the highs, the lows, and the in-betweens of your midlife journey. We will navigate the changes, embrace the challenges, and discover what it means to have infinite possibilities. Get ready for candid conversations, expert insights, and a whole lot of fierce determination. This is Midlife Revival, the podcast that's here to disrupt stereotypes, elevate your midlife game, and celebrate the journey like never before. So sit back, pour up some tea, because we're about to unapologetically flip the script on what it means to thrive in midlife. Hey, hey, welcome back to Midlife Revival, the podcast all about disrupting everything that you thought you knew about your midlife journey. I'm Dr. T. I welcome you back. And let me tell you about this lady I have on here. You know how I like to start out by just talking about how I know my people. So I first met Dr. Pepper when I was still a faculty member. Y'all know all about my job journey. And she gave a talk about burnout. And by and large, it was one of the best talks about burnout that I had ever heard. And I felt like she lived in my brain. I felt like she lived in the closet that I'm recording this podcast in, because everything that she said resonated with me and it helped me have words to what I was experiencing in my career as a physician. And so as I've gotten to know her over, I guess, a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, is that not only is she a big proponent as a physician coach, helping people with perfectionism and burnout, but she really is leading the way to what it means to have passion back in the work that you're doing. She's going to talk a little bit about her story and all of the wonderful goings ins and outs about her journey. But I really wanted to bring her on to the podcast because for many of us in midlife, we experience midlife burnout. And sometimes that is punctuated with a lot of behaviors that we want to correct, especially as it relates to drinking. So as a menopause practitioner, I see lots of patients who struggle with weight gain, for example, or they struggle with triggers. And a lot of it may be related to alcohol consumption. And we know that alcohol consumption, especially at this stage of life, can go up pretty exponentially without us even realizing it. So Dr. Kara, please, thank you so much for being here and talking about your journey and helping the listeners understand their own journeys with alcohol. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I love your podcast.
So can you tell the listeners a little bit about you, and we'll get in more into like the nitty gritty about your story, but just a little about you.
Yeah, I'm a 46-year-old woman who happens to live in Atlanta, but I practice medicine like you do. I'm an internal medicine doctor, which means I take care of adults, especially folks who struggle with eating disorders. I never thought I was going to be a doctor or much less go to college, honestly. I wanted to be a ballet dancer when I was a kid and actually had a modest career doing that. And when I couldn't dance anymore because of eating disorder-related injuries, I brought all my perfectionism and workaholism with me into medicine to try to help other people, specifically athletes, with their injuries, and became a workaholic. And then COVID hit and I realized I couldn't work like that anymore. I needed something different. I recognized I was going to regret spending my 40s in the way that I was spending it, working all the time and being stressed out all the time. And so I made some pretty big changes and created a practice where I can really focus on patients and taking care of myself. And it's been amazing. Medicine is fun again. It feels like so much fun to take care of people. So
yeah,
here I am.
Yeah. Your story was such an inspiration. You say it all the time, and I think I've said it on this podcast no less than five times, that someone's story could be your survival guide. And I looked at your story through burnout and really almost leaving medicine altogether. And that has been really the survival guide for me as I'm navigating where I will end up in medicine. But one thing that really made me want you to come on the podcast, because it had me start scratching my own head about some habits and behaviors that I noticed that I was experiencing in my midlife journey, was around drinking. And so you tell your a pretty compelling story about the decision to no longer drink. And if you could just talk to us about what that was like for you and take us to that day when you made the decision to say no more.
Yeah. So I come from a family of folks who struggle with alcohol use. My grandfather died by suicide. My mom's got alcohol-related memory issues. My brother's been sober for many years. And I always kind of worried that I would end up with a problem drinking. And so the control freak in me had a lot of rules around drinking. I only drank on the weekends. I never drank during the week. And like many people through my 20s and 30s, you'd go on vacation and drink more than normal, but it was a pretty predictable pattern. And I mentioned earlier that I brought all this perfectionism and workaholism with me into medicine. And so alcohol was not really like I had a bad day, I need to unwind, but just like a celebratory, fun way to kind of turn off my brain. And by the time COVID happened, like everyone, I was stressed and had a COVID bubble that I was living in, and we couldn't go out. And so the adults would sit around and drink, and the kids would run around. And it became this kind of habituated increase in the amount that I was drinking that never really showed up, or so I thought, in my work week. And as they say in recovery, it's not how much you drink, but how you drink. The how for me turned very different during that window of time. I really just wanted to turn my brain off. Like that thought of, I don't want to think, I don't want to feel, I don't have to deal with these kids, I don't have to deal with anything that I'm dealing with at work. And so the intensity increased for me. I was having blackouts that I didn't really have in my 40s or in my 30s. I would like worry about my drinking. Like, is this a problem? But I look around and everyone else was drinking wine after work. And I thought, well, it's probably not as bad as other people. So I went through this kind of, is this a problem? Is this not? And so like any good doctor, I would Google my symptoms, how much alcohol is too much, or what are the criteria for alcohol use disorder? And I never really met criteria, but the worry was still there. And so when I made that decision to leave my practice that I'd been with for 14 years and start my own, I was working with a coach and a therapist at the time about what do I want to leave behind and what do I want to create in the future. And it was very clear to me that alcohol was becoming something that was taking up a lot of brain space for me. I felt like I had to manage it. You know, okay, I'm going to drink one glass of wine and then I'll have a glass of water in between. I had all these kind of like behaviors and rules. And I'd done dry January. In fact, the first 6 months of COVID through 2020, I happened to not be drinking at that window of time. But every time I stopped drinking, I would always go back eventually to what I was doing before. And so I didn't want to say that I had a problem, because if you say that out loud, that means you have to actually acknowledge it and deal with it. And what would people think? And so about the time I turned in my letter of resignation, I was having these conversations. And I happened to go to a friend's house, actually, our dear friend, Jill Wiener. And we, as a group of physician women, having dinner. And then I will never forget, she called me 2 days later. I was standing at my workstation at work, and she was like, Kara, I need to say something to you. I can't live with myself if I don't say something. I shouldn't have let you drive home that night. And I was like, Jill, you know, I had two glasses of wine. It was no big deal. And she was like, you had five. And what I didn't tell her was that I drove from her house to someone else's house, had another bottle of wine, and then drove myself home. And no, I should not have been driving. And yes, I was probably most likely impaired. But that's not actually the part that bothered me. The part that bothered me was that someone outside of my head said to me the thing that I'd been trying to keep secret and that I'd been worried about for a long time. And it was like I'd been totally exposed. And so about a month after that, I went on a trip with some other girlfriends to Mexico. And we had this beautiful trip. And at the end of the 6 days, I really only remembered about three of them. And just like many people I know, and like I had always done, when I go on vacation, it's time to let loose. I'm not responsible for anything and drink on the beautiful beach. But it was clear to me that alcohol was having this progressive creep in my life. And at that point, it was clear to me it was taking away not only my stress, but it was definitely taking away my joy. And in this new beginning that I was creating, I was like, I can't do this. Like, if I don't stop now, I'm definitely going to end up with a problem. And it is clear to me that this is not the life that I really want. And so that was it. November 3rd, 2021 in the Cancun airport. I had a really terrible margarita and that was my last, drink. And honestly, like, it was terrifying. I didn't tell anyone because what would people think? You know, I'm a doctor telling people to take care of themselves. And here I am struggling with this thing privately. And if you would have asked me if I ever struggled with anxiety prior to that, I would have been like, absolutely not. Work is my drug. It's the way I escape. But as it turns out, alcohol was also the thing that was mitigating a lot of anxiety for me. And when I quit, I was really, really anxious because I had to actually be with myself and the feelings I'd been trying to run from for so long. And that was really tough. And I'm grateful I already had the support kind of bookended around me in terms of therapy and coaching, et cetera. But that is what kind of launched me here. And there's a lot to be said about that. But I'll say one more thing. It's that it is really, the longer I am sober, the more shocking it is to me how normal drinking is everywhere we go. And particularly as a physician who spends a lot of time trying to tell people what not to do so they don't develop problems down the road, particularly as it pertains to drinking, it is everywhere. And so we wouldn't have a melanoma awareness day on the beach. We wouldn't have lung cancer screening at a hookah lounge. But you want to have a breast cancer fundraiser, there's absolutely going to be wine there because that's just part of our culture. Even though breast cancer is absolutely caused by one of the many factors by alcohol, it's a carcinogen. And so it's just amazing to me once you step away from it, how it's everywhere. And we just act like having a carcinogen for drink every night when we get home from work is just so normalized. Yeah. So anyway,
you know, no. And I'm happy that we're talking about this on this platform, especially as we talk about, I always say, the disembodiment of the midlife journey. I can imagine what you used to do in your 20s, what you used to do in your 30s really doesn't cut it in the same way, whether that's the foods that you eat, whether that's the attitudes that you tolerate. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes for us not socially acceptable to speak up. We don't have the words. We've had years and decades of conditioning that don't allow us to really be in our bodies. We don't really have that skill. We've lost it. I always joke that babies, whether you're chest feeding or you're given a bottle, when they're done, they throw that thing across the room. They have a clear sense of what they need. And over time, we get divorced from those feelings in our body. Yeah. And in coaching, it's all about understanding your feelings are related to thoughts and being in your body, but that's just not a skill that everyone has access to. And so what you said was that you were drinking to kind of numb some of the feelings that you were feeling. And I believe that especially with stressful times, poor sleep, all of the other things that go along with perimenopause even, that there is this discomfort of being in this uncomfortable body, feel this disembodiment. And it is something that you can go to very easily because you could pick it up at the grocery store and just say, well, I'm just going to have a glass of wine. I've said, I've said that plenty of times, the Prosecco and the Saint Germain, anybody that knows me, that's my thing. But it is that feeling like I can't deal right now.
Yeah.
I don't know how to deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink and maybe not just drink a glass of wine, but all of a sudden the bottle is there. It's gone, you know? And so one of the things that you introduced me to this concept was gray drinking.
Yeah.
And can you define gray drinking and really how it shows up for us?
Yeah. So gray drinking is a concept that's been around for probably about 10 years, but it was made really popular by an integrative nutritionist named Jolene Park. And it's really the space between teetotaling and chemical addiction, where you don't have a diagnosis, but there's increased drinking behaviors that may put you at risk or do put you at higher risk for a diagnosis. So there's no rock bottom. Like for me, I didn't come back from Mexico with an STD or a tattoo that I regretted. There was no like big moment, but often people are like, maybe I need to question what I'm doing. You don't have a drinking problem, but you have a problem with how much you're drinking. You may stop, but you always return to what you're doing before. You kind of vacillate between this, like, everything's okay, just live a little, and maybe there is a problem there. So it's in this gray space that's there. And we know that for at least women in America, about 30% of us are already over drinking, and particularly in physician women, it's like between 20 and 25% actually have a diagnosis of alcohol use disorder. We just don't talk about it or get that diagnosis made. So this is really, really common in mommy culture and wine culture. I mean, one look on Etsy, you'll see everything is about wine culture and how we relieve that. And I, to your point, really just looking for an efficient way. And this self-care is like a moral value culture. Alcohol is an efficient, effective way to turn off our brains and turn down the anxiety. I mean, yeah, maybe you want to go to a yoga class or go exercise or meditate, but when you have a lot of things that are pulling at your attention and not enough hours or money during the day, alcohol is a very efficient way to wind down. And so I have a lot of compassion for anyone who's struggling in this space because it is an effective tool, but it comes at a cost over time. So yeah, that's great drinking.
And I remember even seeing that and questioning my own Prosecco. Like, oh, because there are some mornings that you might wake up and you might be like, oh, I don't feel that great, right? Because that's a reality. And newsflash, the older you get, you do not recover like you were in your 20s and 30s. And
oh, yeah.
So you might be like, but I just had one glass or maybe two and I feel terrible.
Yeah.
And then you start questioning, wait, why did I do that? Because I know what the consequences. And then all of a sudden, it's the next night or even the next week and you're back at it.
That's right.
And so when you say you may give up for a while, give it up for a while, and then you're returning to it, it's true. It's kind of like, how much control do you really have here?
Yeah.
And what are you trying to avoid? Those are really the questions. And I find that even in my own life, I had a therapist that created this image of a vessel that I'm holding this vessel of this precious water. And throughout the day, I'm getting pulled. And as I'm getting pulled, that water is pouring out of that vessel. And she just asked, how do you fill the vessel back up? When do you go back to the well and fill the vessel back up? And I really had to say, I don't know, especially as a busy physician mom with a physician spouse. I'm like, I really don't have a lot of opportunity during on a day to day to fill the vessel back. Yeah. And so when I'm feeling pretty spent, what is a very easy and efficient way to make me feel better? And I say that in air quotes, you can't think this is the podcast, but I'm saying
heavy
better,
air quotes,
right?
Yeah.
And that's having a glass of wine or that's having whatever it is.
Yeah.
And like you said, easy and efficient, but at such great cost, not just the next day when you're waking up with a headache and you're sluggish, not just down the line when you've put on 20 pounds without blinking, but then long-term consequences to your health as well.
Yeah, totally. And I think sleep is such an issue for perimenopausal women with the hormonal changes, et cetera. But alcohol absolutely is a sleep disruptor. So if you find yourself waking up at like 2-3 in the morning, not only with hot flashes, but just this disrupted sleep pattern. I mean, I'll be honest, like I had invested in new sheets and this cooling system and all these things because I just kept waking up. And yes, it was Fridays and Saturday nights, but then our sleep recovery takes longer. So I would like spend the rest of the week trying to fill that sleep deficit. And then Friday would come around again. And so I was always tired. And I kept thinking, I don't understand what that is. But once I stopped drinking, I sleep like a baby, which is fascinating.
Absolutely. Like some of the best sleep ever, right?
Yes, totally. Absolutely.
So I always like to give the listeners one thing. Again, I reached out to you again. So you see how much I tap into Dr. Kara. You exposed me again to the concept of damp January. So we're recording this January and my husband and I have tried dry January in the past and it really never stuck for us, right?
Yeah.
But then when you brought up the concept of damp January, I said, I think I'm going to try it. And at this point, my husband had been pretty much switched to zero proof alcohol during the week. And so I was like, well, I don't know if I want to do that completely, but maybe I'll just join you for damp January. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating because the desire to drink went away because I knew I had an opportunity on the weekend or whenever I decided that I was going to have a glass of wine or what have you. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think we're all probably familiar with the concept of you always want what you can't have kind of feeling. And so in my world, as it pertains to food, we often know that overeating or binge eating behaviors are a result of restricting. So people are trying to not eat during the day and then end up overeating or binging at nighttime. And so alcohol is very similar, right? When we say, okay, I'm going to do dry January, I can't have any alcohol, I'm looking towards this deadline of February 1st, it actually intensifies the cravings for alcohol. I can't have it, so I want it. And so dry January is that model of total sobriety for January. But damp January is what in medicine we call it harm reduction, but it's like an intermediate. It's saying, okay, I don't want to go to zero, but if I'm used to drinking every night of the week, maybe I'll just drink Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Or if I'm used to drinking two cocktails, maybe I'll just have one cocktail. So it's taking a step back. It's a little drier. It's damp instead of fully wet. But it's a way to mitigate some of that urgency and craving that's there and just take a step towards something. And I think that's really the take-home message, which is one, to look at your own behaviors and say, is there a cost to this? You know, what are the harms that I may have normalized over time? It's, you know, every adult is just tired, or maybe they're not. It's just the alcohol that's there. So is there a cost to alcohol? And then secondly, what would it be like to take one step towards not drinking? And for some people, I'm one of those people, I just needed a full stop, zero, in order to see what that looked like. But for a lot of people, to decrease the urges because of the restriction, just a step away. So damp January is also an option there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And it could be damp March and damp April.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for New Year's Eve for this to be the case, right? Yeah. Right.
And so as we're wrapping up, I always like to leave the community with three ways to approach the topic that we're talking about. So say there is a listener and they've maybe had these questions. Mm-hmm. And so they're exploring, how do I navigate this world where maybe I'm completely adopting sobriety, or I just want to cut back because I think it's better mm-hmm. for my work week or my health or what have you. What would be three pieces of advice for someone who wants to get started?
Yeah. One is just being honest with yourself. Like, what is this actually doing for me or against me? And just to take a personal inventory to say, is this something I'm worried about? And if you're like me, Googling how many drinks is too many, like, pro tip, you're worried. You should probably just figure out what that is, right? So one is just having a private, honest conversation with yourself about risks and benefits of your use. And we're talking about alcohol here, but, you know, everyone's using THC at this point or other substances. So alcohol may not be your issue, but there may be something else that you're thinking about. So that's one. The second is to tell someone, anyone who you trust, who can make safe space for you, who knows you really well, to say, I think I'm worried about my drinking, or I'm thinking about doing dry January. Because once you say the words out loud, the shame and secrecy gets dissipated. It's not hiding in the darkness anymore. It's something that's outside of you. And if that feels even too scary, you can just send yourself an email, like, get the words out of your head into the universe. And you can do a deliver to yourself in the future email that's going to show up a month from today. And come back and reflect on it in a month and be like, is this still true for me? So that would be the second one. And then the third is, what would it take to go 4 weeks, either damp or dry? I'll urge you to try totally dry, because even if you get 2 weeks in and you're like, I can't do this anymore, that's information for you. So what would it be like to just give up alcohol for 4 weeks? What hangs in the balance of that? Because there may be health concerns, there may be energy, there may be relational stuff, there may be mood disorders underneath that, that you'll learn about in the process and be able to solve those without the need for alcohol long-term. So tell yourself, tell someone else, and take action. Just try it and see what you learn from that.
It's one of the things, I'm grateful for my partner that we can have conversations about this, but he at one point pointed out to me, he was like, I noticed that you've been drinking more Prosecco. Like, mm-hmm. and how do we know, right? You could just see in the trash. And he's like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. This is not like you. So tell me what's going on. And at this particular time in my life, I was super anxious about the holidays. Mm-hmm. And being around family and trying to balance it all and things like that. And what was great was then I had the awareness and I could really directly address what was really going on in my brain, as opposed to trying to self-soothe and medicate with alcohol. That's and right. So I love that. I love that. Send that letter to yourself in the email and be ready for I think there's so much strength that mm-hmm. comes out of making a decision and being able to see it through. Mm-hmm. And really, I love that you said making sure that you have someone that you trust to hold you accountable without judgment, who can really see you through. And I know a lot of what you talked about was also through coaching mm-hmm. and also therapy, helping you get to this place so that when you did make that decision, you felt held and you felt like you had a lot of support.
Yeah, where I could say the thing that felt absolutely terrifying to say out loud. So, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you for having me. So good to be here with you.
Thank you for being here. And yes, this is Midlife Revival Podcast, all about really being with you, the real you, the whole you, not the Instagram version of you or the Facebook version of you, but really being with you as you are navigating the highs, the lows, and the in-betweens of your midlife journey. So we are here. I would love to know what you've taken from this episode. Feel free to, I have all the Dr. Pepper's information in the show notes. So definitely link up with her. And I would love to hear from you. You can always reach me at hello@taniquamd.com to let me know how you like the episode. Peace. Thank you for tuning in to Midlife Revival, the podcast that celebrates the beautiful midlife journey that is you. I'm your host, Dr. Taniqua. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, go ahead and hit subscribe and give us a little bit of those 5 stars that we love so much. And share this episode with a friend you know who needs to hear this message, because sharing is caring. Catch you for the next one.